You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Your girl man saver, better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good, and it's so hard to do right, when you do wrong, when it turn right, but you turn all the way, lele.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima, energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I love this show. I love everybody that listens to this show, and just in case nobody has told you today, I love you, and Creator does too. So, on that note, let's get started with a very blessed and busy guest who is doing some fantastic things in all of our communities, bringing folks together, educating natives about one another, building bridges and divine connections. I am so happy that she could join us today. Hi, would you introduce yourself to us, please, Miss Rose?
Yeah, hi, how are you? My name's Rose Davis, and I publish Indian Voices, a multicultural community newspaper designed to, as you say, build bridges and bring people together.
I love it. Welcome to the show. We're so happy that you're here today.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, let's get started. Indian Voices, what does that mean to you?
Well, it's the process of a long journalism project that I started way back in the 70s, actually.
Oh, wow.
It's sort of an outgrowth of a paper that I got started when I was living in Oakland, California. And at the time, I had small kids. And everybody in the neighborhood thought I had a child care center because, you know, kids attract each other like flies. And I had a house full, and during the summer, we would take hikes in the Oakland area. And on one of those hikes, we bumped into a garage sale that had a duplicating machine. We're talking about, like, in the early 70s. So this was really before the PC, actually. They had a duplicating machine, you know, a Gestetner, whatever you want to call it. It actually a pre-Gestetner. And the guy, it was I think it was a church, actually, that was emptying out their office. And they wanted, like, $12 for it or something like that. And I didn't have that much on me. So I took all the kids and, you know, shook them upside down for their bubblegum money. And we managed to get enough to get the instrument back to the house, and we put it in the closet until one rainy day we were trying to figure out what to do. So I dragged it out and found out where the ink goes and figured out how to use it. And so we put together a little newsletter for the neighborhood, you know, keep the streets clean and lost pets and bicycles and stuff like that. And it was during the time when the Symbolese Liberation Army was running around crazy, assassinating the superintendent of schools, and there were some terrible things going on in the community. And I had little kids, and I said, well, isn't there anything good, happy happening? You know, and so we started doing a little newsletter about that, about, you know, bringing good news to the people in the neighborhood. And, of course, the parents were happy that the kids had some place to stay that it was safe for them. So we continued it, you know, in my house, and so we continued it. And then after the kids went back to school, I carried on as a hobby on myself, because it was ventilating some of my need to be creative beyond making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So after a year of that, I said, well, gee whiz, if I'm going to keep this up, you know, I might as well figure out how to turn it into a newspaper, which I had no idea how to do the newspaper at all. And they said, if you want to do something, find somebody that's doing what you do and copy them. So I looked all around for a newspaper that kind of reflected what I, my impression of what it would, you know, a good newspaper would be. And it was the, what was it? It was the Pacific Sun in Sausalito. But I was in Oakland. I didn't have enough money to get across the bridge, you know, but I finally did manage to get over there and talk to the, and, you know, I was invited over there after I made a phone call by the publisher of that publication, and he invited me over and he showed me how to do the layout, and this is before, you know, the PC, so we were doing galleys at the time, you know, hunt and pick and paste, dude, paste stuff.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man. At any rate, so he showed me what to do, and he said, well, take it back across the bridge, call the first three printers, and then get the cheapest one, which I did, and the first one I called was the cheapest one. So I did the first run of 2,000 issues of the Glad Rag. We call it the Glad Rag because we're looking for something to be up about. We did that for several years until the Tower of Babel got struck by lightning, and everything went crashing down. The house had to go, and the business had to go, and I didn't know where to go. And so they basically came back to San Diego, which is where I am now, at my mom's house, and the kids came with me, and then Papa Bear went to Las Vegas because he had, as a result, it was a family-oriented business, and so he had experience selling advertising, so he got a job working in Las Vegas to sell ads for Slick Magazine. I continued, you know, to figure out what to do, and just to cut it short, I finally got a gig in Las Vegas working for the peace movement, and it was there that I got thrown into learning more about the Native American aspect of our society, which satisfied my needs because I was interested in learning more about my own Seminole self. I related as black most of my adult life, and you know, because the dominant society did a great job in severing any connection I had with my Seminole self. So being in the influence of the Shoshones, which is where the peace movement that I was involved with was there protesting the bombing on the nuclear bombing on the Shoshone reservation. So anyway, just to cut it short, I did a lot of work for them there, and that kind of honed my interest in being more involved in journalism, and because I needed to, you know, reconnect with my creative self toward, you know, what my interest was. So after I did that, I got Indian Voices together and moved out of the desert into Las Vegas proper and got it established there more or less within the community. And then I was called to my mom's bedside here in San Diego, where I still am, and networking with the Indians here. And that's how the paper got started.
What a great adventure.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It is. It continues, actually.
That's right. It does.
And I'm very interested in now, you know, I mean, I had no intention of I just wanted to, you know, give vent to my creative self. You know, I don't do much very well other than write, you know, so I figured, you know, figure out how to be involved with a project that employed my writing. But then the more I got along with it, the more I found that, you know, there was a big void, you know, in the culture that I was inadvertently and unconsciously filling. And then all of a sudden I realized, you know, that I became aware that through attrition, I was the only one of the few voices out there. And I really am interested in bringing the black and Indian culture together, and as well as others, obviously, and the entire indigenous population of the universe. And so that we can have an alternative to the corporate media, which is basically nothing but dumbing us down so that they can control us.
Except this show. This show is awesome.
I beg your pardon?
This show, though, we're trying to educate folks, even though we're using
Exactly. Yeah. You know, that's why I love what you do, you know, because, I mean, and the thing is that we're there, it's just a matter of networking it all together so that we, you know, we are under one umbrella, you know, so that we can speak, you know, without being, you know, and in individual bubbles. It's like we're all in a big bubble. We're all in our individual bubbles, and I want to put all the bubbles into one glass, so that you know, that we can drink from it. You know, because otherwise, you know, we all speak in the same language because we all have the same DNA. You know, we all walk in beauty. You know, but we and the dominant society has to go to you know, they have to go to therapy in order to walk in beauty. You know, we do it naturally. You know, and it's I feel it's imperative that we. All of us who walk in beauty have an opportunity to hold hands and walk together and then incorporate everybody else who wants to follow along.
That's interesting. You're very inclusive.
Well, I mean, we're, you know, everything's connected. You know, we're all one.
Okay.
In my belief, anyway.
Well, that is a very inclusive way of looking at things. And I'm fascinated by the fact that you're starting with a heart for unity. And I think unity is strength, right? I mean, there's a lot of strength.
Oh, absolutely.
In unity. And
absolutely, I agree.
Do you feel like the dominant culture has worked very hard to divide us?
I think. Well, you know what? It's our fault. I mean, yes, to answer your question, but it's our fault. You know, because we allowed them to do that. I don't think that there's an inherent malicious streak within any group of people. But if we allow an avenue to for people to abuse us, they will take it. You know, and so until we stand up and, as you point out, unify, then they're not allowed to walk down that path. You know, just like Dan Rather said, you know, all the reporters are lazy, man. They've lost their professionalism, and they don't report the news. You know, and we have allowed that to happen, and so consequently, we're being fed, you know, the poison of people, the lazy people who would rather, you know, tell us what they want to hear rather than going out and getting the real story. And we're in a situation where we're so encumbered with trying to keep bread and butter on the table, we have no options to filter out what's going on in the world other than what they feed us. You know, and I feel it's imperative for us to awaken. And what we're already doing it intuitively. You know, I mean, we know that what they're telling us is hogwash, you know, but we don't have any answers as to what to do about it in terms of what alternatives to do. That's why I'm beating the drum to try and get all the alternative groups, you know, whether they're bloggers or, you know, the radio and press, everybody under, you know, so we can have our own Fox News.
That's a very powerful idea, a powerful place of connection and energy. So when you talk about what you're doing right now, Indian Voices, when someone reads an issue of Indian Voices, what do you want them to take away from it? What do you want them to learn right now?
Well, you know, I don't have a staff, basically. I have a lot of, very many volunteers and many people who contribute emails and stuff, you know, in San Diego in particular about what's going on. So locally, it educates people as to what's going on at a local level. At a more, at a wider level, I feel it's necessary. One of the objectives is to allow people to be aware of what's going on, you know, in the subterranean area of our existence. You know, and all of the stuff that's, hidden and forbidden. You know, to educate people to all of the vast information that's out there. For example, the Hmong people in Fresno, who are the people who came 40 years ago from the war in Vietnam, you know, who are struggling, and I say struggle because they have a big cultural issue to deal with, you know, and as a result of Paula Yang, who is helping them, you know, they have to adjust to living quietly in our world. You know, but there are many quiet battles that are going on all over the universe. You know, and these battles and challenges need to be understood by people, and they're never get understood by the corporate media because, first of all, they don't have the aptitude and interest to reveal them. So, I guess to answer your question, I guess it's just to basically educate people as to what's going on beyond what the corporate media wants us to know. And I feel that that there's been a concerted effort to take advantage of that void. And why not? I mean, if the shoe was on the other foot, we'd probably be doing the same thing. But we have the option to stand up to it and unify it.
Okay, we have the option. Do you see Indian Voices as a way of empowering people to know the options that they have?
Not just Indian Voices. For example, Censored News with Brenda Noriel. She's doing her best job. Doing a yeoman's work in explaining and revealing what's going on at the indigenous level throughout South America, where there's abuses and so forth that are going on, as a result of the capitalist corporations that are abusing the environment and the people. So it's not just Indian Voices; it's all that are revealing this information. Indian Voices just happens to have a format in terms of a hard copy, which people have tried to talk me out of. Everybody's using their cell phones and smartphones and da da da. Well, I resisted that. I feel that it's necessary to have a hard copy. I also have a website, I'm continuing to keep the hard copy going on, because we were surrounded by 19 different reservations here in San Diego, more than any place in the country.
Wow.
And that information is seeping out every month. I get information going to them to educate them as well. The Kumeyaay, which are the indigenous people here, used to live in the area of downtown on the waterfront, then the military came in, because San Diego is a military town, and they scattered, because there was a bounty about 200 years ago. There was a bounty on the heads of all Kumeyaay, so they all ran to the mountains, or they mixed in with the Mexicans to save themselves. And it's not until recent history, like within the last couple of decades, that they began to become more manifest, because of the casinos. Tourism is one of the biggest industries in San Diego, but nobody knows about Indians except what's going on at the casino. I want that to be, I want to have a tourist attraction to learn, indigenous cultures, to teach them others, teach the tourists something or another, how to have a little straight flush.
That is amazing. I mean, that's a very amazing goal, and it's certainly a big goal as well. And so when I think about...
But Don, it's not that impossible. I mean, the pieces are already together. It's just a matter of networking it.
Yes, and that's what, that's where I see the power of agreement. The power of partnership. Unity is our strength. I really believe that. And I think one of the things, when you have a big goal and a big vision, then there's lots of room for lots of people to come and
absolutely. And here I, I'm just, I live in the house, I live in my mom's house. She's gone on, I'm doing it at a shoestring. Don't have an office or anything like that, and I just keep the heart pumping, hoping that other people, and then it is gradually happening, and thanks to our friend, Paris and her enthusiasm, she just keeps me pumped up. We have a group of people that are three women that are going to do a road trip from here to Standing Rock, South Dakota.
Wow!
And I'm going to give them the Blue Mountain CD so they can play it on the road.
That's perfect. That's very great. I mean, that's right. I mean, that's the perfect open road trip music is our friends
exactly.
at Blue Mountain Tribe, But one of the things I see in you and I think is beautiful is you're so generous and so generative. And I see that because that's a very powerful Native American value, the value of hospitality and generosity. And I think sometimes, I'm a Southerner, so we're noted for our hospitality. Southern hospitality is famous all over the world. But people think often that hospitality is just opening your house up, entertain, don't be afraid to welcome strangers, because some of us entertain angels unawares, And that's true. That's absolutely true. But hospitality is also a heart. It's a heart where you say, you're welcome in this space. You're welcome to learn from what I have. And here's what my tribe does. And tell us about what your people do. And this is the way we worship. And how do you pray? And how do you, what values do you have? And you find this common ground. But that's a hospitality of the spirit and of the soul. Not just of, you know, come on in the house and have some have some sweet tea, right? And some lemonade. But I think that kind of hospitality is what you're practicing when you say, welcome.
Thanks for that insight, because I never saw it like that. You know, I guess I guess I'm kind of selfish, because all I want to do is be happy. You know, that's all I want. You know, I can't be happy when I see all this discord, when I know that the answer is so simple, you know? The alternative, I mean, we have good medicine for all this insanity that's surrounding us.
Absolutely.
If we can just, you know, go back to be the hospitable people that we are by nature. And all of those competitive selfishness is something that's been taught to us. It's not us. If we can just go be ourselves, you know, all the hospitality that's needed is there.
I'm interested in the idea too, you know, there's a wonderful slogan that's supposed to help us dissolve domestic violence in our indigenous communities, and it says, violence is not our tradition.
Exactly.
And I think so often
it's not.
And we think of violence, though, in very specific terms, right? And we forget that there's lateral violence where we hurt one another, the whole crabs in a bucket kind of thing. And then there's the violence we do to people's spirits, like cyberbullying and dragging people on the internet. And there are all these other ways of violence besides just shooting someone in the street, you know?
But once again, not to be totally one-sided about the whole issue, I do feel that those negative aspects are things that we've been conditioned to develop by the oppressor.
That's colonialism.
Thank you.
You know, that's what it is, though.
Yeah, and so the purpose of the paper, in addition, is to teach that, you know, to teach people and educate them about, you know, about the 500 years of injustice that we've experienced as a result of the, you know, of the papal bull, you know, whatever, you know, the dominating, you know, the domination of the Christianity. But, you know, you're working on ticklish terms there, you know, because people are so embroiled and embedded in their, culture, a religious culture that is not necessarily their innate, you know, their indigenous, it's not necessarily the culture that their DNA is espousing. You know, so you have to, you know, like, if you want to make sure you have, stay friends with people, you don't talk about, you know, politics or religion.
Absolutely.
And those are the issues that are critical to be talked about, though.
But the issue is, too, that I think that we have to remember that religion and spirituality are not synonymous. Right? They're not. We're talking about sets of rules and laws, and that actually can become legalism. Fundamentalism exists in every culture, not just one religion. I mean, there's fundamentalists in every kind of religion. It's when it's really our spirits that truly align with however you pray, you know, however you decide to walk, whatever path is for you. When your spirit is actually ignited, then I believe that God is still speaking.
I love that, you know, and that's the path I try to walk.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that as we all walk on that path, we have to do something very special, you know. And for me, it's to remember this will simplify your life. It simplified mine. It will simplify everyone's life, because you ask somebody how they're doing, and the first answer they give you is busy, hectic, chaotic, right? And I'm like that too. I'm always in motion. But this simplified my life. Huh. I decided that my only to-do list is to love God and love others.
Wow.
And when I hold that up to my eyes, it's like a prism. And you know how you see the rainbows when you look through a prism, or even a kaleidoscope where you see all the colors and shapes and all that? Then I see, I see pure light and colors and beautiful things. When I take that down, I see chaos, mayhem, busyness, hectic, pressure, stress. And when I really set that on my life like a template, love God, love others, what I find is what I thought was important, what the phone calls are telling me is important, or the staff is running around telling me needs to be covered or done, love God, love others. Then you find out what's really important is to respect people, to listen to their stories, things
like
that.
Victory speaking real truth, you know. Fortunately, you have the luxury of doing that. You know, I see people on the street, homeless people, who perhaps have the same ability to see that, to put the prison up to their eyes, but because of this, you know, the incessant pressures of just survival prevents them from that, you know. And I feel that everybody should have that opportunity to see the prism, you know. And they all do. They do have the capacity, you know, but many of them, you know, might see the prism and walk out in the street and then wind up at CMH, which is community mental health.
Oh, dear. But, you know, I'm saying that we're using it as a way to remember why we do what we do. And, you know, why I started this show, because I work in mainstream media, and so many of the stereotypes and so many of the things we were presenting to people on the mainstream news, I thought we need an antidote. We need some good news. I mean, I want to spotlight the positive things that are happening in Native America, positive people, uplifting things.
Right.
I know what's happening everywhere else. I'm very aware of the poverty and all those other things. But I wanted a space where non-Natives could see a spotlight on positive Natives. And other Native people could see they're not the only one in your community doing anything. You know, sometimes we're all so isolated and we feel like, oh, it's just, you know, an uphill battle. And then you listen to this show and find out all over the world people are doing great and wonderful things.
And that's such a beauty. You know, that's what, you know, motivates me to, you know, to keep on keeping on.
Oh, yeah. You have
to know, just knowing it. You know, it's, you know, all those bubbles are out there. You know, I know they're there. I don't know of them. I mean, I know, the ancestors have told me that they're there, so I believe it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they are, and we are, and everybody else is too. You know, there are a lot of people who complain about our young people today, but there are some fantastic Native youth out there. There are some great young people out there. The future is in good hands, and the now is in good hands, and the next is in good hands, and the then is in good hands. And I think what we all have to do is keep shining that light so that other people can see it.
Yeah, put the old school in new bottles for sure.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I love it. Wow, we are so blessed to be here with you today. What a great blessing.
Okay, we'll be right back with more of this amazing conversation.
Do you overcook your pasta? Do you mix your lights with your darks and tell long, complicated jokes that have no punchline? Do you have trouble wrapping gifts, sound like a hyena when singing happy birthday, and have no idea how the metric system works? Well, if you answered yes to any of the above questions, you may have what it takes to adopt a teen from foster care, because teens don't need perfection, they need you. So if you can't tie a Windsor knot, forget to defrost the chicken, can't tell a latte from a cappuccino, confuse North and South Dakota, overuse commas, throw a frisbee like it's a flounder, and still believe kids really do love lima beans, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts, it's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. For more information on how you can adopt, call 1-888-200-4005 or go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council. Do you overcook your pasta? Do you mix your lights with your darks and tell long, complicated jokes that have no punchline? Do you have trouble wrapping gifts? Sound like a hyena when singing happy birthday and have no idea how the metric system works? Well, if you answered yes to any of the above questions, you may have what it takes to adopt a teen from foster care, because teens don't need perfection, they need you. So if you can't tie a Windsor knot, forget to defrost the chicken, can't tell a latte from a cappuccino, confuse North and South Dakota, overuse commas, throw a frisbee like it's a flounder, and still believe kids really do love lima beans, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts, it's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. For more information on how you can adopt, call 1-888-200-4005 or go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
We can give you a new heart.
We can help you walk again.
We can perform brain surgery.
We can treat a sore throat.
We can bring life into the world.
We can work so many miracles. But the one thing we cannot do is read your mind.
When you communicate with your doctor,
when you ask us more questions,
you reduce your risk of suffering a medical mistake.
Tens of thousands of lives are lost every year due to medical mistakes.
The healthcare community is working on it, but you can help.
Please, open up. Ask more questions.
What are the side effects?
When should I expect my test results?
Will this medication interact with my other prescriptions?
We can't answer if you don't ask.
Help reduce your risk.
Questions are the answer.
Learn the 10 questions you must ask. Visit www.ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and the Ad Council.
Your daughter doesn't want to talk about why her room is a horrible mess. Your son doesn't want to talk about why he's wearing mismatching socks. Your spouse doesn't want to talk about their bad haircut. Families don't have to talk about everything, but they should talk to plan for an emergency. Pack basic supplies in a go bag, water, canned food, flashlights, batteries, medical supplies, IDs, and some cash. Talk about where you'll meet in case you lose one another. And of course, don't forget to pack the dog treats. Talk to your family and make an emergency plan. Go to nyc.gov/readyny or call 311 to make your family's emergency plan. Brought to you by New York City Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
Hi, everyone. Al Roker here. As a guy with his own catchphrase, I appreciate that after 75 years, Smokey's only said,
"Only you can prevent wildfires."
But I'm filling in because there's a lot more to report. Like when it's dry or windy. Be careful burning yard waste, because wildfires can even start in your neck of the woods. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presents, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hey, I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something serious. I know you love me, I know you like using me wherever you are, but I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Yeah, hold on.
Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back.
If you're not facing your mortgage issues, this can be the most terrifying sound in the world. It means you've fallen behind. It means hope is dwindling. It means you're another call closer to losing your home to foreclosure. Fortunately, there's hope. If you need real help and guidance, call 1-888-995-HOPE. That's 1-888-995-4673. Because nothing is worse than doing nothing.
I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I just love to share with you, to give you all kinds of wonderful spotlights into the great things that positive people are doing. You know, there are a lot of ways to have Indian voices in our lives. And I do believe that we should be thankful for every voice that speaks into our life in a good and positive and blessed way. And I want to share in just some things that are on my heart right now and just speak some peace into our lives right now today. You know, it's very hectic right now. It's very stressful because, you know, people have a lot of things going on politically, and there's ideas happening, and there's a lot of news, and there's a lot of people that are just kind of upset about a lot of things. And I just want to take a moment and just say, you know, it doesn't matter, really, after the election, after all the news headlines, after all the divisions and disunity and all of that, we still have to live here together. We still have to live next door to our neighbors and across the street from our friends. And we still have to sit in the cubicle beside the coworkers. And we still have to be in the same dormitories and the same spaces in grocery stores. And so during these turbulent times, when it seems like a lot of people are choosing sides and there's a lot of divisive rhetoric and name-calling and labeling and people lashing out and cyberbullying and dragging folks on the internet and just a culture that lacks civility in a lot of ways, I just want to remind us of a couple of things. Just put a couple of things out there into the universe and let us think positively about them. The first is that, you know, mercy triumphs over judgment. It's important to be merciful. Sometimes mercy will settle this issue for you. Do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? I see people deleting and blocking people they've known for years. They've been friends because they don't like a comment on a post or something somebody said. And really? Is it worth it? Is it? Now, there's some people in our lives that are toxic, and I'm not saying we should host those or entertain those. But I'm talking about the people we interact with, and sometimes these people have been faithful to us. They've been kind to us, and yet we're quick to cut them off just because we disagree. So this is what helps me when I come into these kind of situations. First of all, when someone does something or posts something or says something that I don't like, the first thing I think about is, what has this person done in my life that I did like, that has contributed blessings and good things to it? See, sometimes when you look at it, a person's Facebook post isn't as important as the fact that they really helped you during a tough time, or they're always there for you, or they care about you. There are friends I have who think in all kinds of ways that I don't always agree with. And I'm not talking about things like, you know, there's some that are deal breakers, like racism or misogyny or violence. I'm not speaking about that. I'm talking about the things, can I overlook this thing I think is negative about them? Because there's so much else right and positive about them. The next thing that helps me in those kinds of situations is it worth it? Is it worth it to lose this friend over an argument on Twitter? Is it worth it to no longer have this person to talk to or be awkward around them just because I don't like the way they vote? Or I don't like what they said about this or that, or I disagree with them? And again, I'm not talking about really toxic things. I'm just talking about differences of opinion. Is it worth it? Do I want to be happy, or do I want to be right? The next thing that helps me in a space like that is, how much do I really know about this situation? You know, somebody posts something, they're upset with someone, someone did this or did that, and they post it on Instagram, and everyone jumps in the comments and says, oh, this person is terrible, and there's so much wrong with them, and they're so evil, and they're so bad. I always look at that and I think, do I really know anything about this situation at all? I wasn't there. I don't know both sides of it. I only know this person that's posting about it from social media. I really don't know enough. I don't really know enough about this situation to judge. The next thing that helps me in a situation like that is to think of how I would want someone to treat me. See, I think a lot of times we treat people, we say, oh, they should have known better, or they shouldn't have said that, or they shouldn't have posted that, or they shouldn't have thought like that, or whatever. But we forget. You know, we've posted things, and we've said things, and we've made comments, maybe, that someone else could have taken offense at and treated us the same way. Now again, there's never any reason to be racist or misogynistic or to hurt people and tear people down unnecessarily. We're not talking about toxic behavior. We're just talking about the fact that sometimes people have opinions that differ from ours. Another thing that helps me in that particular way is when we realize that we're going to need mercy ourselves. When did I mess up? You know, when did I say something and I didn't mean it that way, but everybody took it that way, and I would want them to listen to my explanation. If you live long enough, and you do anything in your life, you're going to need some mercy. You're going to need somebody to be merciful to you. We're quick to holler and honk and make rude gestures to people when they cut us off in traffic. But how about the times when you've cut people off? You didn't mean to, but you just pulled out. How would you want to be treated? You made a mistake. And there's such a thing as a mistake. You know what? Everybody makes mistakes. And if you haven't made any lately, you will. And what do you want when you make a mistake? What's the mercy you want? If you're wrong about something, would you want people to take the time to educate you about it? Would you want someone to say, you know, I see that you have this opinion, but have you thought about this and this here? Because sometimes confrontation is an effort, a last-ditch effort, not to lose a connection. When people could just look at your opinion and just block you. But when someone takes the time to say, you know, have you thought about this? Did you know that? I'm not talking about argumentative people. I'm talking about people who sincerely come to you and have something on their hearts they want to share. Those are actually academic spaces. Educational moments, teachable moments that we can have with one another. And those are the building blocks of reconciliation of all kinds. We've all gone into the store and the store clerk was crabby. And it's easy to be crabby back. That's easy. We can do that. Somebody's got an attitude with us. Well, I'm going to show them my attitude. Really? That's easy. But what if we extended mercy into every situation? And just said, you know, I could judge and criticize, and I could tear this down. Or I could simply say, it seems like you're having a tough day. Sure hope it gets better. Or sometimes the most merciful thing is to say nothing at all. I think it's so important to us to remember that people are precious. Our friends, our neighbors, our loved ones. We have so many people with broken friendships and broken relationships and broken families. And sometimes it's just because of the smallest things. My granddaddy used to say, a little hinge will swing a big door. And sometimes it's the little foxes that spoil the vine. And so what if we made a decision to walk in mercy? You know, I'm just not going to take offense. I could, I have a right to, I'm not going to take offense, but I am going to take action. I'm not going to go out of my way to hurt anybody. If people need to be corrected, if a situation needs to be fixed, you can speak the truth in love. And love can be firm. Love can be demanding. Love can have consequences. Love can expect something of someone. But we don't have to be nasty. We don't have to break people's hearts. We don't have to hurt them in order to correct them. Lateral violence is not our tradition. You know, you can have a problem with someone without posting it all over the internet. You can have a problem with someone without encouraging other people to have a problem with them too. I guarantee that if you've been alive long enough, somebody has done that for you. There's somebody that you've hurt, that you've wronged, that you've disappointed, who didn't tell the world about you. Who didn't post it on Snapchat? Who didn't make an Instagram story about it? There's somebody in your life who just let you go. You may not have even known it. You hurt their feelings and they just forgave you by default. You said something dumb and they just let it go. You were in a crabby mood and you snapped at them and really you were wrong, but you know what? They were nice to you anyway. When you recognize those moments, you're the recipient of mercy. And that will make you really humble. That will make you really, really grateful when you know you messed up and somebody is going to help you. Be merciful to you. Let it go instead of blowing it up and exposing it. Again, I'm not talking about crime. I'm not talking about racism. I'm not talking about domestic violence or misogyny or any of those toxic behaviors or ones like them. I'm talking about those things that happen in day-to-day life. You know, those little things that happen between people who would otherwise get along or at least be fine, be pretty chill with each other. There's one more thing that helps me in these kinds of times and circumstances when people are so quick to argue and divide and take sides. And it's to remember humility. I mean, sometimes I think I'm right, but I might be wrong. I could be wrong. Sometimes I'm absolutely certain I'm right, and then I find out I was right, but there's new information about the subject, or something has changed about the situation, or I was right about it when it was like this, but now it's like that, and I have to be ready for humility. And I'm not talking about false humility, which is, you know, I'm a worm and I know nothing. Humility is simply saying I'm walking in wisdom in this situation. I'm setting aside my right to be right. I'm presenting the information as I see it, as I know it, and I'm understanding that it might have other sides to it, or other perspectives or lenses, and other people might see it differently than I do. And that's okay. And maybe I could learn from them. It makes a very big difference just the way we phrase things. In my humble opinion, I believe, I think, I feel. In my experience, the way I see it, I thought that. Grace goes a long way in these kinds of situations. Grace is unmerited favor. a willingness to bend down or stoop to a different level. What difference would it make in your life, in your relationships, in your friendships, in your workplace, in your social media, if you were willing to bend a little bit? Not compromise with evil. Not change with the weather. But just, you know, they post a lot of dog pictures. I post a lot of cat pictures, but they're all cute. We've got the whole social media universe covered that way. Dogs and cats living together, getting along. What would happen if we were willing to give people the benefit of the doubt? Just to assume that they're trying to make it through their day. You don't know what is happening to people. We don't. I was at an airport one time, and the clerk was really rude to me and really short with me, and I was asking about the gate, and they just snapped at me, and I was like, oh my goodness. And I just said to them, you know, I'm very sorry. It seems like you're having a bad day, and I'm sorry that my asking you to look up the gate is causing you any more trouble, but I really need this gate. Will you please help me? And the clerk looked right at me and said, I'm so sorry, and told me that they had just lost a family member, and they had just found out about it, but they had to finish their shift until somebody could come to relieve them, and then they could go home and deal with this tragic loss. And they were standing there brokenhearted and hurting and having to look up gates when really their heart was on its knees, broken. Well, unfortunately, I know what it's like to get that kind of news. And a lot of you do too. And in that moment, that clerk was sorry for their behavior. And I was sorry for their tragedy. And it was a moment of compassion when it could have been something that escalated and became an incident and was ugly and all of that. And not only did that clerk give me the number of the gate, but they put me in first class too. And that moment taught me a lot. It taught me a lot that I can approach situations in ways that bring reconciliation and healing, or I can approach them in ways where, for a few minutes, I feel right. Wonder how many blessings we miss in our life because we need to be right. I'm not talking about needing to be true or just or righteous. I'm talking about, I just need to be right. I need to get them told. I need to tell them off. How many dating relationships are broken because neither person is willing to extend mercy? Somebody does something you don't like and you just cut them off. I tell you what, I don't put up with that. I don't play that. I don't like people playing on my phone. And you just think, what? Really? How will you get through a marriage of many, many, many years when every day you will be called upon in little ways and big ways to forgive and walk in love and mercy? Again, I'm not talking about things that are wrong and toxic, sinful, evil, bad. No, I'm talking about just the little things that we go through in a day. What would our world be like if we extended mercy to one another instead of judgment and criticism? How would our communities change? How would our hearts heal if we were safe to express ourselves and know that immediately everyone wasn't waiting to pounce on us in the comment section on Twitter, on Facebook, or argue with us on Twitter? What would happen if we could have become safe spaces for one another, that you can make a mistake, you can try to do something with the best intentions? You ever been hurt by somebody misunderstanding your intentions? You really meant well. You were trying to help people, and yet it got all out of control, and now everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, and you just don't even understand what happened because your intentions were good. You ever been lied on? Oh, it's a hurtful thing to be lied on. What would our communities look like if we just stopped doing that just to the people we like and love? What if we just treated our coworkers and friends and family and church family and the folks we go to Sundance and ceremony and all of that with, the people we sweat with and the people that we come in contact with in our neighborhood? What if we just started there, extending mercy? How would our communities change for the better? We're not talking about condoning wrong or aiding and abetting crime or turning a blind eye to some true social injustice, but just the little things. He leaves the cap off the toothpaste, but he takes the trash out. Throw some mercy on it. You know, yeah, she watches this dumb program and you don't really like it, but you know what? You watch some dumb programs too. Put some mercy on it. You know, you ask them a question and they were in the middle of something else and they kind of snapped at you, but you know what? Usually they're pretty good friends, so let's just let it go. Let's put some mercy on it. They posted something and you don't agree with it, and you know, it's not really hurting anybody. It's just a difference of opinion. And you could jump in the comment section and you could, you know, really like, you know, put a little angry face on Facebook, or, you know, then you could argue and bicker back and forth on Twitter and tell them how stupid they are. Or you could just let it go and like them and keep your friendship with them. I'm not saying don't educate. I'm not saying don't enlighten. I'm saying we need to know the difference between when we are doing things and walking in mercy and when we're just judging, just walking in judgment. We need to know the difference between when it's our personal opinion versus their personal opinion, instead of just really right versus wrong. Our communities can heal, and we can heal each other. And we can decide to make our homes and our classrooms and our part of the world where we are is a safe space for people to be. A lot of people ask to come on this show. I'm always amazed by that. People contact me and say, really like to come on this show. And I started asking them why. Why? And they said it was because they have so much fun here. And then other people said it was because they meet great other guests here. And then other people said it was because they just really love to talk to me about their lives. And then a lot of people started saying that they felt really comfortable here, that they share things. And you've heard them say it. Our guests will start sharing and say, I've never shared that before. I've never told anybody about that. Or, wow, I don't know why I said that. Or I just felt really comfortable opening up about that. Why? Because this is a safe space. A conversation with Don Karima. That's just what it is, a conversation. As tribal people, we know that telling our stories is how we survive. What if we made ourselves hospitable to people, that they could tell their stories to us and we would be kind and merciful to them? We wouldn't judge them or make fun of them, or, you know, why would anybody do that? Or how could anybody be that dumb? But we would decide to at least hear their story. Whether it's a sentence about how their day went today, or why they do the career they do, or the path they chose in life and what it means to them. What if we decided that when we listen to one another, we would decide that the first step in love is to listen? I'm just going to listen to you. I'm going to try to hear your heart and be merciful to you. This show is a safe place. That's why we don't really discuss politics or, you know, current news events and things like that. We discuss lives and thoughts and ideas, dreams and visions and goals and plans and projects and accomplishments and achievements. This is a place where we spotlight the stars of Native America so that Native communities can see the good news happening in our communities, and non-Natives can see the wonderful things that are happening too. We love the people who come on this show. We love the people who listen to this show. We love the people who make this show possible. And now, why don't all of us try to love each other? Walk in love. Treat each other with mercy. Sprinkle kindness all over everything. Be good to each other, just because we can. It's a great thing about love. The more you give away, the more you get, and you always have plenty. You know, you can afford to be generous. You can afford to be gracious. You can afford to be kind. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Thank you for all of you that support this show. Thank you for all of you that share this show on your social media and encourage other people to tune in and listen. Be kind to one another. Be kind to everyone that you love. You know what? Let's just be kind. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'm so thankful that you are here with us today.
You got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.